We all know that one moment when you realize your boyfriend is too stupid to live with free will. Clap it up if you've erased his mind and replaced him with a personality that's more pliable to your goals.
What's that on your screen? Some kind of program about a Westworld on TV. Well, it doesn't sound like anything to me.
I'm Red Scott.
And I'm Ivan Hernandez.
And this doesn't sound like anything to me.
Once again, the third best Westworld podcast, even if we aren't entirely accurate when it comes to our Japanese historical references. Musashi was a real guy. I just thought that he wasn't because I don't believe that anyone born in the 1600s is an actual person. Galileo? You kidding me?
As Americans, I refuse to believe in anybody who existed before 1776.
That's my cutoff! 1776, everything before that might as well be fucking fantasy. Might as well be fairy tales of King Arthur and his round table.
Paul Revere, I've got some questions.
Listen, all I know about Paul Revere, great Beastie Boys song.
Great Beastie Boys song. That's the one thing that's real. This is Season 2, Episode 6 of Westworld, Phase Space, written by Carly Rae, not Jepsen. She co-wrote 202 with Jonathan Nolan. This is her first episode of Westworld where she's credited, and I'm going to break it right now. This is a banger, and I hope she writes the rest of the series. Get rid of these Nolans, Carly Rae, all the way.
I love cyberspace, baby!
Yes.
I'm all about jacking into the dark web.
Finally, we got into the Matrix. Finally. Finally, we got the true Matrix spiritual sequel we've all been longing for. Finally, we proved what Elon Musk has said all along, that it's all a simulation.
But we need tunnels. We need tunnels, guys. Just tunnels. What are we going to do with these tunnels? I don't know. But we need tunnels.
Yeah, I'm podcasting today. I want you to know the extents to which I'm going. I'm podcasting on a very small and fragile kit from my sister's bedroom in upstate New York. All thanks to the Patreons. Otherwise, I would not subject myself to this subpar equipment that I myself have bought.
But by the way, Red is also podcasting from a 0.2 blood alcohol limit.
I'm not even near drunk safari level.
By the way, did you see Solo? Because I get the feeling we are not going to care about it enough to want to do an actual episode about it.
That's wrong. I enjoyed Solo a lot. I don't know why everybody's shitting on it. What a great time.
Yeah. Oh, because it was a fucking heist movie?
Finally a heist movie where we have space poker and Donald Glover and This Is America, baby. It was a great time.
It was such a fucking half of a good movie somewhere.
Somewhere
they have half of a good movie in that movie. And I still don't know if Alden Ehrenreich can act. I watched that entire movie and I don't know if Alden Ehrenreich is capable of acting.
I will say that I enjoyed my first viewing much, much, much more than The Last Jedi. On par with Rogue One, but my first viewing was at a drive-in theater. Sitting in a lawn chair. So if you've seen a drive-in theater, you know the sound isn't great. The video is a little fuzzy. So there was a lot that could have been better about it. I won't really know how I feel until I see it a second time through. I had a great time. It was a delight.
This is what happens when people don't have to spend upwards. This is what happens when I have MoviePass and Red is financially comfortable. Neither of us care enough about these films.
I'm going to go back and watch it. But before we can get into this episode, we need to know what happened previously on Westworld.
Ah, the beautiful tinkling strings of cultural appropriation. Hi, Dad. Or should I say, hi, William. That was last season. We already got past that twist. Damn it! Did you know that swords can be used on both men and women? Truly egalitarian. Okay, so here's my new theme park. Tandy Newton condescends to me in Japanese while holding a katana. Costs upwards of $300,000 per visit.
I'm in.
I'm pretty sure that this is the only way you could ever pick up Tessa Thompson with a dune buggy. And finally, ladies, we all know that one moment when you realize your boyfriend is too stupid to live with free will. Clap it up if you've erased his mind and replaced him with a personality that's more pliable to your goals. And that was previously on Westworld.
Did you notice that the previously on music was very strange?
I believe it was supposed to be slightly Japanese influenced.
Oh, is that what they were going for?
I, I honestly can't tell because these guys are either doing a terrible job of appropriating things well or doing a great job of badly appropriating things.
So here's something that I struggle with all the time with this show. It seems very clear to me that Lee Sizemore is supposed to be a AAA video games writer, and so all the storylines in Westworld, in Raj World, in Shogun World are supposed to be very first pass. They're supposed to be appropriative. They're supposed to be a shell of what those cultures actually are. They're supposed to showcase some of the worst tendencies of video game writers that have existed for decades. But at the same time, it's executed at such a high and loving fidelity that it doesn't let the audience in on that sort of slapstick aspect enough. And so it just, like, when people complain about it, like, I totally get it. But I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. I'm still trying to figure out where I stand.
I would just like to say that I agree, but for the listeners, Red is currently in an inclined position so that his entire body is looming over me, and with his hand movements, I really feel like I'm being mansplained too aggressively right now. So even if I didn't actually agree with this, I'd have to agree because he's pressured me so much with his body language.
Listen, I've got some opinions and you're going to agree to them.
It's the hand movements happening directly against the camera that really sells it. This is a bad video game writer writing a bad video game that is actually a multi-$100 million television production.
And I feel like
if you're somebody who expects the writing in their shows to be uniformly excellent and not ironically bad, you're going to have problems with this.
And it's one of those things where I feel like normally I would just say, like, well, they're clearly, like, enough people are sort of offended by the tack that they're taking that it's clearly not successful in what they're trying to do. But it is also one of my favorite things that they do in Westworld. Like, I laugh so hard at the surface level aspect of all of it, which is very easy for me as a privileged straight white man whose culture is not being mocked. Except for video game culture, which is
and
openly
you say
being mocked. Yeah.
But by the way, this is not a good episode for gingers.
No, but it was a great episode for men with thinning hair with bad vision who want to be uploaded into the Matrix. It's really an excellent episode for us.
That singularity is going to hit one day, buddy, and you're going to be able to upload your soul into San Junipero.
And also, there were two scenes that happened in this episode that I was like, why are we dealing with the rest of these people? All I want to know is what happened in this opening scene with Bernard and Dolores.
That was crazy because at first, so I figure we're getting into it, right?
Let's get into it.
Yeah. So it opens with one of those classic Bernard Dolores twofer scenes,
sure,
where, you know, Dolores is supposed to be getting drilled about fucking how she's going to eventually be a killer robot.
Right.
And you think that it's one of those scenes, but then Dolores is like, you're not doing a good job of being Arnold at all. And you're like, oh, no, it's Bernard, even though the subtitles did give away that it was Bernard. But I was just like, oh, okay.
Well, the subtitles did give away that they're Bernard. There was a I think it was a subtitle bug later. We'll get into it. But it refers to one character as another character. And in a show like this, ooh, I'm like, wait, what? Why? Who?
Also, I really love how much they're starting to lampshade a lot of their own concepts because they know that they've introduced so much crap that a lot of the viewers can't possibly trust that they're not having a double, triple blind pulled on them.
I certainly cannot.
I love when fucking the Man in Black's daughter was like, no, I'm not a robot.
I know that everybody
expects me to be a robot because I'm a new character who just came out of nowhere, but no, I'm not a robot.
And also, she's been referred to as Grace when the Man in Black's daughter was named Emily, and I suppose there's a possibility of another daughter, or her name is Emily Grace. There's a lot of ways it could go, but that would seem manipulative, which Nolan and Joy would never do to us.
I honestly thought when he referred to her as Ford, I thought that he had named her after Ford. I was like, that seems an odd thing to do, to name your daughter after this person you have a very adversarial relationship with, but I don't get white people anyway.
It's a choice. It is a choice. I mean, yeah, it's a standard thing. In most Anglo-Saxon cultures, you name your firstborn after your greatest enemy. Your greatest friend and enemy. It's somebody that you both admired once, but now you want to kill with a broadsword.
Oh, is that why your child's name is going to be, you're not allowed to bring drinks in here, sir?
Yeah. My child's will be the San Francisco Beverage and Alcohol Coalition.
You're coming after that board.
These sons of bitches.
They need to let those bars stay out past two.
So we have Bernard and Dolores. They're in one of those scenes. And this is a scene they showed it again at the beginning of the season. And my honest reaction was, Jesus Christ, we're still going back to this. I thought we'd moved on. But this paid off huge because I was sort of, you know, I was like, okay, yeah, they're all talking about free will, blah, blah, blah. If you outgrow the space, what would become of you? And then he says, I'm not sure if it's my choice to make. And Dolores says, that's not what he said. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? And so my first reaction when I saw this is I know that the hosts have a hard time discerning when they're in the past or the present. And I was like, wait, is she interacting with one of her past memories and like doing sort of wish fulfillment of what she should have done?
At first, I thought that she was somehow manipulating her own memories so that she could, like, interact with them as they are happening. Because, you know, as we have established, the robots experience memory as, you know, this thing is happening to me right now and I can't tell the difference between that and memory. And I thought that she might have, you know, gained the power to be able to manipulate that data in order to, you know, essentially use it as a simulation in her mind.
So it was something that we have mentioned before as an option, but that we have kind of brushed off as implausible. She is interacting with Bernard as if in the same way that William as and the Man in Black interacted with James Delos, the droid, indicating to me that we could be dealing with them trying to plant Arnold into Bernard. And him constantly coming back online.
Yeah. And there's also the option that the Bernard we are seeing interacting with Dolores is not the Bernard that we are seeing having a fun trip to the central cradle with Elsie.
Absolutely. There's no way to know that.
Yeah, exactly. Unless one of those fucking promotional, unless they did one of those stupid fucking fake out promo images.
I mean, so one of the things that I have floated is a lot of people are like, oh, they weren't able to get the consciousness transplant to really take hold. And it's like, yes, they did. It lasted up to 35 days at a time. So it's possible that they've just been replanting Arnold, you know, with the additional memories that he's gained, you know, every time he goes on rotation, which.
Yeah.
Is my current theory. That's where I currently believe.
That's what finally kicked in for me, that Bernard is one of those, like, people robots who I am going to refer to borrow a Marvel Universe term, mandroids. I'm going to call them mandroids from now on.
Don't do that.
No, too late. We are establishing that hosts who are based on the, uploaded consciousness of real people are mandroids. They're
like
mandroids,
this.
Red. Why fight against the future?
So
it's full of mandroids. It's raining mandroids.
I don't like any part of this.
So yeah, it finally clicked that he is a person-based host and not a, you know, completely made-up personality host. So he's going to end up, breaking down because of that.
So we have, we go from there to Teddy and Sweetwater next to the can of condensed milk. He picks up a bullet, and if you remember, the last time we saw Teddy, the tech was scrambling all his settings so he'd be a less sensitive, more masculine. He upped the toxic masculinity slider up to its maximum.
And the entire time I was like, Teddy, don't eat the bullet. Don't eat the bullet, Teddy. The bullet is not milk. Don't eat the bullet, Teddy.
And we have Dolores as the player piano, which is what I think of it every time a host is playing it. Did you notice what song was playing? I did not grasp it this time.
No, I did not notice either. Although I just realized there's a nice little bit of symmetry with Dolores at the player piano in this episode and at the end of the episode, Ford at the player piano.
Oh, that's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Well done, my good sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Red. I'm going to give myself a little gold sticker.
You should do that. That's why I shipped them to you.
This system where I am allowed to dole little gold stickers out to myself really works.
But only the ones that I say you can.
Yes, sir.
There are rules for a reason. So how many times did you step off that train, Dolores says to Teddy. And it's like, yeah, that man was weak and born to fail.
I love it. So, by the way, I have to say again, the NPC who is stuck in that loop of moving chips across the table seems like he's having the best time of any person who's ever lived or not lived, as the case may be.
He has attainable goals and he can complete them. That seems like a very satisfying existence.
He can, and he gets to reset it all over. He's truly the one person who is in charge of his own destiny.
It's like when you're 8 years old and you figured out how to play solitaire on the computer.
You're like, ah, I'm gonna make those fucking cards fly all over the place.
What are we calling new Teddy? I decided he was Mega Teddy.
Oh, I like that. I want to fit. I want to find if there's a way that I can fit ICP into Teddy. his new battle.net username is XXTeddyXX.
Yeah, with I'm gonna say three X's on either side, with the middle X capitalized and the other X's lowercase.
Yes, I like this. You know what? We'll call him Alt Teddy.
Yeah, I like Alt Teddy. Yeah,
I like Alt Teddy.
He's got some problematic views.
He's been red-pilled. He really should not have joined the Teddy Rights or Association.
So we have in the front of the train, the one of the QA guys is wearing a noose, who has mentioned that he knows about Peter Hale. He's trying to give details about where Peter Abernathy could be. And Evil Teddy just offs the guy.
Yeah, Teddy is just straight up dropping bodies now.
Yeah, he's not that Teddy who's worried about mortality or morality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dolores is kind of like, I don't... She has that look where she's kind of like, I'm a little conflicted about this new Teddy, but I'm also wet.
That wasn't the reading I got, if that's what you were saying.
That was the reading that I got. She finally got that bad boy she always wanted.
Yeah, she's like, I don't like him as a human being, but I'm more interested in him as a man. So Stubbs closes the eyes of we cut to Stubbs, closing the eyes of a fellow QA member who died backstage.
And how awful a job is that, having to be the designated guy who closes the eyelids on all of the corpses?
And never once do they get those corpses, we've all seen them, where you close the eyelids and they just snap back open, and you have to do it like five or six times.
just one intern walking around with some scotch tape, just scotch taping all of the eyes shut and all of the corpses.
So Charlotte Hale walks into this with the, where the fuck have you been? And she is, they've been much better about, especially for the security aspect, establishing the timeline. Mm-hmm. She walks in and says, it has been 1 week, i.e. 1 week before they actually roll up on the beach, but 1 week after the initial event. Mm-hmm. So we're right in the middle right now, Stubbs.
Yeah.
Which was very helpful for me.
I also like when she's like, where the fuck have you been? Chris wasn't nearly as tardy on set as you are.
They call for help, and he's like, what? You could have called for help this whole time? And she basically goes, not for you. For something of value.
Oh, and when Stubbs is like, what, the corporation's not just going to let all of these people die, right? It's like, oh, buddy, you haven't seen a single movie about a corrupt corporation, have
no.
you?
And I
feel like that's one of the tests on the interview to become the Perk security head. Like, what is your opinion about corrupt corporations? I like them.
They're pretty great.
that's how he got that job securing Tesla's facilities.
Yeah, they show them a picture of Elon Musk with a mech body, and they're like, does this seem like a bad thing to you?
I like it, ED-209, but with an Elon Musk head.
Exactly.
It has to be the balding head, though.
Yeah, and it's like, I admire him.
I can't wait to subscribe to his fucking news honesty verification service.
The Boring Company and their flamethrowers are going to make the world great.
I hate this guy so much.
They take Hale to some techs. They want to... And they have Abernathy.
Yeah.
And them bolting Peter Abernathy to the chair with a bolt gun that they just had on hand for this purpose was dark.
Yo, I was like, wait, are they going to cut off this guy's feet? Like, don't they just have a turn off feet function? Like, right. I feel like me and Stubbs both had the same look where we were like, yo, I wouldn't put a bolt through my fucking Super Nintendo. Why are you putting a bolt through this fucking robot guy?
And also, there's like a skin flap you can cut to get an Ethernet jack. You're telling me there's not like one in the armpit where there's just like an off switch?
Yeah, it's the entire thing is very grotesque, as it's meant to be, because we're supposed to identify with these robots.
And I did, and it was gross. And you succeeded again, Nolan and Joy. Mm. So we cut from there to, we just hear woman breathing deeply and rhythmically, and we're back in Shogun World, which... I honestly expected that we would get a gap before getting more Shogun World, if anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't think more Shogun World immediately the next episode.
Yeah, this is it for Shogun World, I believe, which is, it's classic video game stuff where they go into one world, one of the characters gets her special powers, they're able to bring one character back out with them, because it couldn't be DLC if you didn't have at least one character who joins the main party in the main quest chain.
And, I was so... Were you immediately aware of what was happening with Akane and Sakura? Like, when I saw the knife come out, I was like, oh, she's going to kill herself. And then I heard sawing, and I was like, what is happening? And for a second, I thought she'd sought out her own heart.
This whole cutting out her heart thing... I'm not going to say with any certainty whether that's an established part of Japanese culture, but it seemed pretty weird to me.
I'm going to say with certainty that I think it's disgusting and I respect it if it's real.
If they've made this up, they are truly mocking the beautiful culture of Japan. And if this is an established part of the beautiful culture of Japan, then it truly is a wonder.
Absolutely. That's how I feel deep down inside. There's no ambiguity in that for me. That's a strong statement that I'm willing to stand by.
The worst mistake that anybody could ever make is letting Tandy Newton put all of those slots into dual weapon specialization.
Yeah, once I saw her with two
swords,
I was like, it's over.
You let her have two katanas?
Yeah.
Two katanas!
That's like when you see like Neo with two pistols. You're like, dual wielding? What's happening?
It's like, why couldn't he just get one big pistol?
We cut from there to Maeve and a few others attempting to make their exit. So we've got Felix, Sylvester, Lee, Akane. We've got
Musashi.
Mm-hmm. And also, I've been calling her the woman with the dragon tattoo.
I just call her Japanese Armistice because I forgot her actual name. Her name is Tao Akimoto, a woman who I have had a huge crush on ever since the Wolverine. By the way. We should acknowledge that is Rinko Kikuchi.
Rinko Kikuchi.
Akane
yes.
is Rinko Kikuchi, which I did not catch last week because I'm going to have to say I have only seen one Rinko Kikuchi movie, and it is Pacific Rim.
I'd seen zero of these people. I've seen Pacific Rim. I think it was Hiro. I've got his full name here somewhere.
Hiroyuki Sanada. He is also in The Wolverine.
I think it was him who was in The Wolverine and who was also in the Japanese version of Sideways.
What?
Clicking on all the
One of my absolute favorite things is when you find out that, like, a foreign culture adapted a very, like, normcore American movie.
And it's like, the thing about it is he's not even in some, like, other wine country. They literally put him in... the Central Coast of California.
What?
It's
so
like
it's a movie it's a Japanese remake of Sideways that takes place in America.
The translated title on IMDb is Sideways. Like they didn't stray at all. I have to watch that movie.
Obviously, he's not playing the Giamatti character.
This was like when I was pausing it to do research. I didn't have a lot of time to dig into it.
Yeah, I read an interview with Hiroyuki Sanada, and he said that basically, yeah, they explained it to me, and they were like, it's going to be a shitty version of Japanese culture filtered through this asshole's view. And he was like, oh, okay, cool. By the way, here are all of your historical inaccuracies. Like, there were a lot of historical inaccuracies that were meant, apparently the kimonos are had like leather inseams, which they are not supposed to have because Japan didn't do leather curing back then.
So,
but like very basic stuff, like how you like do the closing of the kimono, they got wrong because that, once again, Japan is a very aesthetic culture. So you can be wearing your shirt the wrong way very easily.
So, I watched all of the special featurettes that normally air after the episode. So I watched all the first five. And so one of them, they talk about very specifically the costume designers was trying to create parallels between the Doppelbots, the sort of Japanese mm-hmm. versions of the character. So he is obviously playing the Hector Escalante character played by Rodrigo Santorum. And
did you just call him Rodrigo Santorum?
No, Rodrigo Santorum.
I feel like you just called him Rodrigo Santorum.
Yes, that's what I did. That's what I'm calling him from now on. So a couple things they talk about is basically their costuming was mirrored. And so the costume designers went to great lengths. So for his costume, they added the leather details to make it mirror the ridiculous costume that Hector Escalante was wearing. And they showed him talking about the costuming, and he's like, yeah, Japanese design, but like these American materials, it's kind of cool. So I don't know if that was after they got to him and explained what they were doing, but there's at least one video of him seeming to be okay with it. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Plus, I have to imagine that they're paying him well. I have to imagine that the actors who get the 2-episode guest star slot on an HBO series are getting paid pretty nicely.
And they also mentioned that they brought the stunt guys in to fight with to do sword fights with him, and they were like, apparently he's like a master swordsman. And the stunt guys were like,
I love this.
The stunt guys were like, this guy's the fucking greatest, and they were freaking out about getting to sword fight with him.
Oh, that's so cute. I love shit like that with stunt people so much. By the way,
the best.
I feel like we should kind of talk about Deadpool 2 at some point. Because we both you've been more of a fan of Deadpool than I ever imagined possible, but also there's a lot of very weird problematic elements vis-a-vis that production that we should talk about.
Oh sure. We can definitely talk about that at some point.
We'll do that at some point. Yes. That at some point.
So Maeve chooses not, so he basically says, so Musashi and Akane, how do you pronounce her name?
Just go with Akane.
Akane. Yeah. That's what I'm going for now. basically says that they're not going with them, and Maeve lets them choose their own fate.
Yeah.
And but I was surprised because I thought all of the Japanese characters would not go with them, but the woman with the dragon tattoo does come with them.
Ah, I love that Japanese armistice is like, I haven't even had a crack at this ass yet. You think I'm going to leave this go? You think that I'm going to get the best pussy in the West go, my own?
I'm very curious to see if that's actually where that goes.
Also, I really love, if you don't notice, in one of the scenes where the guy who gets his arm cut off, I don't know if it's just the perspective, but that was the tiniest fake arm I have ever seen in my life. It was just like, oh, is this, did they have to get one of the like tiny baby fake arms? Were they all out of large fake arms that day?
I missed that. I need to go back and look at that.
I loved it. Also, this is why you always keep the safety on your secondary sword.
It's very important.
It's very important.
So we head from there to Lawrence and the Man in Black with Grace, the Man in Black's daughter. And I had to go back and check. Grace was still alive. The Man in Black's daughter was still alive by his own accounting, but blamed him for Juliet's death, his wife, her mom. So that was what we knew about her before She walked onto the stage, and I was surprised, given that she's clearly alive, that and that she's been in Westworld enough that she could, that she would like learn Lakota, mm-hmm. so she could speak to the Ghost Nation, that he initially assumed that it was Ford creating a host exactly like his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very confused by the Man in Black's reaction to her. I feel like, I mean, either he's just a bigger asshole than I've ever guessed, or there's another shoe that's going to drop there.
I don't know. I think that they were just kind of trying to lampshade the possibility that she is a robot, so that people know she is not a robot, so that if she gets fucking shot, we're not just going to be like, oh, she's a robot. Because right, at this point, they have made it so that every character can be upwards of multiple robots.
Certainly. And we have sort of... God, there's a trope term for it, but I can't think of it right now. In the first season, when Ford was... He had a host that he was building behind them the whole time, underneath his house at the woods, and we still don't know what that host was.
Yeah, yeah. They put a host on the mantle.
Yeah, they put a host on the mantle, exactly.
Yeah, Chekhov's host.
By the third act, we're going to know who that host is. So every time we're introduced to a character like this, my initial reaction was like, oh my god, it is a host.
I also really liked Clifton Collins being like, you really want to take your daughter through here? Why not IHOP, where kids eat free on Wednesdays? I love that all of them are wired to try to take them to the Parks IHOP. That's good brand synergy.
By the way, I'm in Buffalo, New York, and I drove past. They have a place here called the Pancake House. And I was like, and we were arguing about what it was famous for, and somebody said it was for their Dutch babies. And so they looked it up, and they discovered that the Pancake House in Buffalo, New York has branched out and has... it has branches in Greece and in Spain, which mean it is the International Pancake House, not the International House of Pancakes, mind you, but an International Pancake House.
It's the IF?
It's the IF, as people know it colloquially all over the world.
Oh, I bet they've had so much legal trouble from the International House.
Just because they decided to expand overseas. It's just a pancake house. It's very different. So she's very good at the game. Like she she notices before the Man in Black does that that the arrows are not Ghost Nation arrows, which means it's a trap set by, you know, some of the other people. And it's like, what? I feel like the Man in Black should have been able to recognize that type of thing. We're led to believe that she spent a lot of time in the park, but only when she was much younger. As she herself was like, oh, I came in and realized I could, like, have sex with all the hosts for the first time.
I hated that double entendre.
I loved it.
So fucking much. I rode there for a couple of days, and then I rode there for a couple of days, too. Ah, ooh, God. Humana, humana, humana. I hated it.
You loved it. You loved it. What is it about becoming evil, as we learned from Wyatt, as we learned from Megateddy, that it makes you more confident, it makes you more relaxed, and it lowers your voice half an octave?
Red, maybe you want to take a walk on the dark side.
Listen, I just feel freer than ever. I've got some lessons that people need to learn.
Are we going to have a deep voice off?
Oh, we're going to have a deep voice off.
Because I honestly don't think that you could get any deeper than this.
You have no idea what you're in for.
I was born in darkness.
I did.
I'm sorry. I was born in darkness.
Hey, I'm back. I'm morals. As you can tell by my goofy, uptight voice.
This is going to be the thing that actually physically destroys the podcast. We're going to go so deep it rips time and space in two.
Yeah.
Eventually, we'll go deep voice and we'll both have soundboards.
Oh, when you fucking spilled the beans about what that soundboard program was, the first thing I did was look it up and was like, fuck, it's a Mac. I'm going to get that iMac. Just watch. I'm going to get that green case iMac.
And so she, yeah, I don't know, but I'm very confused about her backstory and why she knows the languages. I don't know.
You didn't notice, but in every scene, she is actually reading an issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Is that Westworld Power? We go to Elsie and Bernard, who is... I'm so glad we didn't have any Elsie last episode, and I feel like I'm being teased with Elsie. That's all I want.
Oh, I love it. I love the fucking trail of hats leading them in.
Yeah, that we got the white hat, we got the black hat, and it's like, oh, they killed the welcome crew? They're no threat to anybody. It's like, oh, aren't they?
Listen, they're a threat to that ass.
I believe if... And Bernard is very complimentary. I believe if anyone can right the ship by sheer force of will, it's you. And then they kiss.
Oh, he's an Elsie stan, too.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, if anybody is more... I feel like it's just me projecting myself into Westworld every time I see Bernard. He's a man who may or may not be a host, just trying to help Elsie get to her ultimate goals.
I hate when you do those dramatic glasses reveals all the time. Please keep your glasses on. Stop it! I feel like something's about to happen now.
Nothing warms my heart more than Elsie being mad at QA. And I'm glad we got to see that in this episode.
My favorite part was when she was like, oh, they got climate control working, nice priorities. And it's like, yeah, that was definitely a Floridian on that team. It's like, we need central AC first of all. And everybody else was like, yes, this Florida man truly has his priorities straight.
So again, I came out to Buffalo to visit my sister, and I looked at the weather. It's like, Jesus, it's going to be 81 degrees. And I was like, I guess I can roll up my jeans a little bit. I guess
you're just like, all right, time to break out my Borat bikini.
And then I was like, wait, what's the humidity? And I was like, above 50%? No!
You guys don't know, but Red is actually podcasting from a temperature controlled sealed plastic bubble.
I refuse to leave.
I don't know why you're not going to let John Travolta on the mic.
And I've never felt like when you watch a film and you see somebody return to their rightful place, that's how I felt when Elsie opened up a terminal and started ignoring everyone around her.
Oh, that fucking stupid server farm. I really thought that it was going to be much harder for them to get to the end boss's stage.
It is. It turns out it's just an entry into a virtual world where there's going to be other... You don't think there's going to be another server room inside of that virtual world? Have you not seen the Nolans?
I hate that they have literally given us a separate reality. We had multiple timelines, and now we have an entire separate cyberspace reality to jack into.
Now it's time for you to ask, Ivan, which reality are we in right now?
I hate this! I'm spitting my top, and if Marion Cotillard shows up, I'm going to demonstrate to her that jet fuel can melt steel beams.
So QA has been trying to control, but what they are calling, it's been stopped by the cradle, which is what they're calling the area that maintains the backup host brains, which, as we know, are essentially the consciousness of the hosts. And we learned that something in there is improvising. I'm very excited about this. So the group arrives. What is the name? We're back in...
I believe this is supposed to be... Oh, I keep forgetting what that fucking... It's Mount Fuji, but I believe that there is a famous painting of it that they are supposed to be aping.
Yes. Yeah. The Mount Fuji painting, I believe it's called.
Yes. And my favorite part was how the Armistice keep asking for everyone to form a conga line. It's like, you guys are just looking for excuses to touch each other. Leave the rest of the group out of this.
Lee finds a way out. It's littered with bodies. There's a slide. Felix goes down first. And lands on top of a bunch of dead bodies.
Actually, the head goes down first.
That's
because
true.
Because anytime you're That's going fair. Down a hole, you want to throw a decapitated head as a test.
And if we know anything from early HBO seasons, we'll later learn that head was actually George W. Bush.
Why don't they keep that George W. Bush head in storage away from the production companies?
I don't know.
Just
They're just
get
constantly
more
like,
trouble, guys.
We just need a random head, not one that's a political problem. Like, just put that stupid wig on it, and it'll be fine.
Not only is it a past president, now they're culturally appropriating him. I don't think anybody wants to see fake Japanese George W. Bush.
The only person who wants to see that is George W. Bush.
He's like, I'd love to paint that.
I mean, honestly, okay, just close your eyes if you're listening to this. Now, imagine George W. Bush in a kimono. Tell me it doesn't work. Tell me he's not a weeaboo.
I don't like this at all because, you know, now every ex-president is like, gotta find a way to relax. What's the best possible relaxing outfit that I could have? And it's like they always go for a kimono at one point.
They go for
You know, Barack put that kimono on.
Oh, absolutely. And he was the only one who was able to pull it off.
Also, I love when Japanese Armistice uses her sword to light the heart on fire, which it just proves what I've always been saying. It's a tool, not a weapon, all right? People keep telling me, you can't bring your katana camping. And I'm like, what if we need fire? What if we need fire and to decapitate a bear?
We've got this tiny flint and the other thing. We'll be fine.
No, we need a sword. If you don't start a sword with a fire, you haven't really started a fire.
So we have Grace and the man in black. And so Grace, oh, I see. You don't drink in the real world. I'm glad you can tell the difference. And I like that she didn't realize, oh, that he'd also been drinking in the real world. Come on, don't be dumb. Don't be naive.
I actually love the idea that William is straight edge when he's in the real world.
Yeah,
he just has to scratch off those X tattoos on his hands.
It's only when I go into this world and join the Foot Clan that I do all the things that I wish I could do.
Oh, fucking Sam Rockwell's it in there.
You can do a lot of damage. And so Grace was invited by Charlotte Hale to the shareholders meeting, as she is either officially a shareholder or just because her dad's one of the major shareholder. Who knows?
I mean, technically, she's a Delos.
Yeah, that's a good. She has Delos blood, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her last name is whatever the hell William's last name. I don't think we ever got that.
I don't think we have gotten William's last name at any point.
Let's call him William last name.
I would love it if his name was William Man in Black.
William Man in Black.
William Man in Black.
Yeah. Of the Kentucky Man of Blacks.
It works perfect.
So she says, her reason that she's there is she just decided to come for the party, because it was a free trip, decided to revisit Rajwold, bone a bunch of dudes to embarrass her dad. And then just once that happened to come find him, so that he didn't get his way and do death by robot or whatever. But if you'll remember, when we first see her, she opens up a notebook that has a map of the whole place with the little interlocking D symbol that was used to show where James Delos's host was being kept and where they were working on this sort of afterlife project, which makes me think she had some other reason for being here, and that perhaps her stated reason is not her real reason at all.
Wait, so you're saying that this character might have an ulterior motive?
It might have the main motive that it's presented and then had another one. I don't know what the term for that is, but I think that's what's happening.
What an incredible world they've created where a person can have two priorities in their brain at one time.
It's crazy that this reality they've created where a person can say one thing yet mean another thing. I find it fascinating.
Once we get uploaded into the Matrix, none of more of that shit. No more of that shit. We're all just going to be yelling fucking data at each other like,
The Matrix is truth, pure baby. And great and wonderful, and there's going to be Anthony Hopkins and dogs, and I'm going to love it.
I think my favorite part of this is when she's like, oh, you wanted to commit death by robot? And it's like, if you want to commit death by robot, you can just get that one robot that's just an arm with a knife at the end and stand in front of it. It's not that hard.
It really isn't. You could have visited Shogun World for 10 seconds.
Listen, you just go to one of those Tesla factories. You're dead in a second.
And so this is a very interesting interaction because we have Grace basically saying something that seems very meaningful, where she says, listen, you weren't a great dad. I'm summarizing. But I shouldn't have pinned.
Oh, I thought you were telling me. I was like, I've been a terrible father to my children. I keep leaving them in a garbage can or a toilet.
And I shouldn't have pinned mom's death on you. And let's start again. And it's very touching in the moment. And he's like, sure, quick nap, and then we'll deal with that. And then he disappears immediately.
Also, I like when he's like, after that, you and I are even, which is a great way to filter interfamily, interpersonal relationships.
The main thing is when you're dealing with interpersonal relationships or any relationships, it's all about quid pro quo. The first thing any relationship expert will tell you is it's all about tracking favors, interactions, deciding who has the most points, who deserves to have the most points but doesn't, and then making sure that the person who doesn't knows that they're a piece of shit. That's how you have healthy relationships.
Everything is transactional. After this podcast, me and Red are going to PayPal each other $200. It all evens out, but it's the metaphor of the thing that's important.
Yeah. I have an abacus for each of my grudges. So
tink, tink, slide, slide.
So the next day, Grace wakes up by herself. And he's such a piece of shit. And they've gone to great lengths to show us that the man in black is not a good guy. This is the first time in a while where I lowered my estimation of him as a human being.
This is such a dad move, though. We got to go to the airport 5 hours early. If you're not awake, you're not coming with us.
Yeah, he basically home aloned her, even though she's much too old for that.
He home aloned her.
And he's like, where's your ticket? Oh, I guess I accidentally scrubbed it into the trash can and forgot that you were with us. There's a lot of kids with me. There's me, there's Lawrence, there's these other guys, there's you, my actual child. It's hard to keep track.
Or should I say, child robot?
Yeah, she's not a robot. I'm going to actually now go back and watch the Raj World episode, because I don't remember if she proved that she was real, or if it was just him.
No, I feel like it was just him that got shot.
I hate that.
I feel like she proved that she was real by allowing him to have sex with her.
I don't know if that's how that works.
Listen, when you're a man, feels real, it's real.
I don't think that's how that works in this world, Ivan.
Well, I guess you're not invited to my wedding with a fleshlight.
I was going to make you my
best man.
I remember when they met like it was yesterday. A package arrived and Ivan said, get out of here.
I was like, oh, this is truly the primest of shipping.
So we have Elsie and Bernard. And so we learned that essentially there are one thing that has been true throughout this show is they have this unusual fidelity in a world where you have virtual consciousness that they don't have consciousness swaps. Mm-hmm. They don't have clones. Which has been a very interesting and unique aspect of the idea of a virtual consciousness in Westworld. So it's super fascinating that it sounds like they essentially have duplicate cores in the cradle, and each one of them are running in some sort of simulation.
Yeah, they say that the cradle is not supposed to be meant to, you know, interact with outside systems, but it is running in a cyber simulation of the entirety of Westworld at any given time.
Yeah, they're like, listen, we have a firewall, and it's like, yeah, the NSA backdoored that firewall, so you're kind of hosed.
So it's basically an MMO with no players, where everything functions perfectly and as it's meant to, because there's no players breaking the game at every point possible.
And I do really appreciate, though Elsie has supported Bernard in being a person with its own agency, that she also respects that he is still a machine that has a brain cord that can be pulled out, and that's who he actually is. And so when he's like, put me into the machine, like, I feel like a shittier writer who didn't understand the core of what Elsie is, like I do, would have been like, no, Bernard, don't do this. Please don't do this. Please don't. Oh, no. Where she was like, yeah, no, I mean, it's going to hurt a lot. And he's like, that's fine. And she's like, okay. And then presses the button because she understands who he is.
I loved Put Me Inside. Anytime anybody jacks into cyberspace, I fucking love it. It's so 1995. I love it. What?
Also, 1999, when The Matrix came out. Come on.
Listen, I'm going after the true cyberpunk originator. I'm going full William Gibson, baby. They are breaking into cyberspace. They've got their ice on them. They're hacking the Gibson.
You can tell it's completely different from The Matrix or William Gibson because they don't plug into the back. They plug into the top of the head. Completely different world. Completely different idea. I object to you suggesting that they're similar in any way, shape, or form.
I really love when Bernard is just like, the pain's just a program. Ow, ow, turn off the program. Turn off the program.
So this is, we get something that we had seen in the promos that we all felt was kind of spoilery. Mm-hmm. Bernard wakes up on the train in the simulation in Teddy's spot.
So that's interesting.
This single frame had led a lot of people to wonder if like Teddy and Bernard had been switched. I think this leads me to believe that that is not the case, though, of course, it could be a misdirect and not an actual direct, of which there are very few in this television show.
Honestly, this entire scene, I couldn't concentrate because of all of the tension, because I kept expecting that claw to drop his control unit. The entire time, I was like, oh no, you almost got it. You just have to navigate in there. Oh, God, I'm never going to get that that lobster harmonica.
So we have the parachutes landing near Stubbs, and Coughlin arrives with Engels.
Oh,
I love Coughlin's mustache.
God.
I love his attitude.
Dismissive Scotsman.
I love him.
Oh, and they're immediately name-shaming Ashley. It's like, that's a perfectly fine name.
Right, and they,
as Ash from Evil Dead has proven.
Yeah, and I mean, it's literally toxic masculinity. The corporation has showed up. And he's like, listen, Ashley, your techs best get their hand on their dicks. And he's like, some of them are women, I will have you know.
All right, hands off their dicks and or pussies if they've got one.
Thank you, Coughlin.
God, it's so PC these days. By which I mean personal computer.
People are just not very respectful to the smartest, best looking Hemsworth.
Really? You're going to give it to Luke?
No, he's just the Hemsworth in the best intellectual property. So he's the smartest, best-looking Hemsworth. He's the only Hemsworth that can't catch a break. I'm still mad at his brother for showing up to the Westworld premiere wearing a bomber jacket when he was wearing a suit.
Wait, which Hemsworth? Thor or the young one?
Thor.
By the way, I've heard those Hemsworth are just a bunch of dummies. I've heard that they are awful interviews.
Oh, I hope so. Listen, there's a lot of actors that I love that are very, very dumb. I don't need actors to be
things.
I don't need actors to be good people. I just need them to be able to like take on the qualities of a good human being.
You just need them to basically be a cipher who you throw personality onto.
Thank you. That's all I'm asking.
when Joe Pantoliano was playing a character named Cypher, you were like, this is perfect.
This is working well for me. That I definitely felt good about that. So Maeve finds a grave to climb out of on the prairie. Mm-hmm. And this... Maeve thanks Sizemore, and it's the first time I see a real reflection in Lee Sizemore's eyes that he actively treats her like a person.
I thought that this was just, once again, a man needing somebody to explicitly give him credit for a good thing he should have done in the first place.
And
like, you can enjoy your one admirable contribution now. If you read that line as sarcastic, it's a lot different.
Oh, it's definitely sarcastic.
Oh, and he's like, oh, yeah, I did do a good thing for this robot who's lesser than me because I'm a white man.
But also, I think it's very clear that... she's going to come back and meet with Lee Sizemore again and be like, how the fuck didn't you tell me that you'd replaced me? That I was going to see my daughter who had a new mother who'd taken over my part.
Which I 100% called, I believe, last season.
Oh, of course that was going to happen. I mean,
it was the most obvious fucking shit.
It was obvious, but I blocked it out of my memory because it's so heartbreaking.
Oh, and she's like, once again, they cast a younger actress to replace an older actress.
And also, I don't know if you know, the whole party is now, they found new clothes. They're all dressed Western, even the girl with the dragon tattoo.
I love Japanese Armistice Western look, because she's still got her fucking arm bands, and she's like, can't abandon the gimmick, baby. Got to go with the brand. Always got to protect the brand.
100% of the time. It's the only way you can go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and this is one of my favorite parts. When you have to split up the party so one of the characters can finish their personal quest chain.
So we sort of cut to the Ghost Nation starting to take out the Man in Black's party, and then we cut back to Maeve.
I love when fucking Clifton Collins and his cousin are speaking Spanish, and the Man in Black goes, "This is Westworld, speak Western."
Yeah, he pulls out his MAGA cowboy hat, which is very easy for the Ghost Nation to see. It's a terrible choice.
MWGA, make Westworld great again.
And I was very... If you've seen enough film, if you've seen enough television, there's certain things that you know aren't going to be happy reunions. When I saw how she was framed so tinily on the top of that hill that was clearly off kilter, I was like, is this happy reunion framing? No, it's...
Oh, no!
No, it's not. Are these happy reunion violins? No, 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 they're not.
Oh, and she managed to aggro the raiding party.
Yep. Yep, yep. She sees the Ghost Nation coming. What did you make of the Ghost Nation saying, come with us, we are meant to the same path? One of the biggest mysteries this season that I feel like I really don't have a handle on, there's some interesting theories, such that the Ghost Nation is meant to help the actual guests get out alive and to sort of help serve backstage, but... It does seem like they have some greater purpose that may be related to Ford that has not been revealed yet. And I really don't know where I fall on them.
I am maintaining that they are basically, you know, the antibodies of the Ford intelligence in the park, you know, who is using them as an extension of himself to physically affect Westworld because he cannot.
Right. I mean, it's really fascinating. And I think they are the big untold story of this season that I'm looking at this point. I don't know. I think I've started to trust this show, especially after Shogun World. I feel like was done well in the way it was supposed to be, but I'm sure people would disagree. Yeah. And I'm kind of excited to see where the Ghost Nation story goes.
Yeah, and I do believe that the actor who played the Ghost Nation raider, who talked to Tandy Newton, is the actor who was earlier the, you know, the guy from Fargo who shows up to be like, "Hey, William, I'm a host."
Yeah, how's it going?
Yeah, hey, I'm a host.
So come with us. Did you also think that the Maeve's daughter, who was holding two dolls, and one was a black doll with black hair, and the other one was a doll with blonde hair? And I was like, oh, is that Maeve and Dolores?
Who knows? Maybe she does have two mommies. All of the robots have the two mommies, the good mommy and the bad mommy. This is all going to hinge on mommy theory.
Maeve is going to be so furious the next time she sees Sizemore. And it's just like, you couldn't give me a goddamn heads up.
Oh, and he remains a bad ally, tries to get out while the getting's bad.
Yep, it does not go well for him.
Oh, and here's the thing, though. Felix remains a good boy.
Yeah, Felix is the only good person in this whole thing.
He really is. He is the one human character who can rely on to make the chaotic good choice.
So we see Lee Sizemore with Felix and Sylvester brings out his QA radio, which, if you remember, he stole from one of the QA people who'd been hung in the weird boxes with rats to eat their faces, or I don't know what they were for. And calls for help. Who knows what the hell that means? I'm pretty sure it means people are going to descend upon him and just ruin his life.
Yeah, I love when he's like, I'm getting help. It's called a forced disconnect, and it'll take us out of here no matter where we are.
Yeah, good luck with that.
You got a forced disconnect if that raid is going to get wiped out.
I'm pretty sure what's going to happen is we're going to get Mustache is going to show up with a Scottish accent and just stomp on his face for a while.
Oh, absolutely.
So Dolores and Dolores' army, who I always think of as Dumbledore's army. Like, I just like, on the train. Teddy, with his voice an octave lower, finally comfortable with who he is. Just trying to find a solution. All Teddy just, he's like, I never thought I'd want to leave, but I suppose you fixed that too. And Dolores is like, maybe you want to talk to your therapist about that instead of having me do that emotional labor right here, right now, where we're trying to accomplish something. You said it'd be cool if we worked together.
If a woman rewrites your entire personality, she should do some emotional labor to help maintain that.
Maybe you should have written your own personality?
No, I have to make myself out of an amalgamation of other people's personality traits.
And so Teddy gives the tech a gun and one bullet and says, "That's the last of my mercy. Better use it fast." Then they drop the train behind them, and I don't know what's happening to him. I assume he's going to plunge off of something, though it's not clear to me how at this point.
Oh, they fucking loaded up the entire front cab with explosives and they blew it up while it's in the middle of the mesa.
Oh, is that what was happening?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's where that big explosion came from.
Oh, I was very confused by that scene.
You drunk. Were you like, why is everything exploding around me?
No, I was fine. We take notes. So many notes. I'm like researching stuff at the same time. Once in a while you miss minor things like everything exploding in the middle of the mesa.
I love Coughlin when he's like, did you shut off the killer robots? Because that's the main thing, isn't there?
Yeah.
You can get as many maps back online as you want, but if you haven't shut off those killer robots, you are not going to be able to gather XP.
Then you haven't done shit.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they get the map back. They see the train. They are upset by that. We cut from there to Elsie and Bernard. Bernard is in Matrix Sweetwater. We see, so this is, I'm sure you remember, this is the Ford family's dog.
Yeah, I knew that was not a period-appropriate dog.
I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, it didn't seem hardy enough to survive in those conditions.
Exactly, it wasn't a period-appropriate dog. All dogs in the Old West are just old scruffers.
And Bernard walks past Teddy, who doesn't see him. And there is Ford in Sweetwater playing the piano. He backed himself up.
I fucking knew it. I fucking called it. He uploaded himself into cyberspace. Like every single fucking aging creator of robots always tries.
Yeah, here's the thing James Delos did. He screwed up trying to put himself back in the host when you can live in the Matrix forever.
You really want to get your brain uploaded into that server, don't you?
Obviously. I'm not even trying to hide that. I want to be in the server forever. And listen, I don't want it to be in a basic server.
It's not your soul.
No, but it's a version of me that's having a great time. And it's going to be a version where physics doesn't apply. And I can fly.
You get to
and
drink all you want.
Sure. Yeah, and it's just going to be a delight of a time.
I can't wait until you get kicked out of San Junipero for drinking. The one person who finally drank enough virtual booze to put them out of business.
And I don't know if it's just because of after last week's episode, I was so ready for some more world building. There's just like a lot of action, and it was really focused on Shogun World and just very physical interactions between all of those characters. But I loved getting just so many mind-breaking moments in this. There, it's my favorite episode of this season, possibly in the series.
Of course, because it finally gave you the one thing you've always wanted from entertainment, a fantasy reality that you'd love to go into, i.e. a fucking Matrix. Are you the guy who's constantly like, give me that steak. I know it's just mush. I know it's just pre-processed corpse mush, but I want that fucking steak.
Don't try and walk me into being Cyrus. I'm not Cyrus.
I'm Neo. You're Cypher. You're I'm totally Neo every Cypher. Time. You are one. First of all, Neo wasn't even the one.
No.
That was my favorite part of those fucking stupid sequels where they're like, no, Neo isn't the one. It's just this rando kid.
So I think that season two, episode six.
That is the episode.
Phase Space. This has been a wonderful episode. Next week, I'll be back in my full studio. I'll be much shorter, and Ivan will be able to deal with me on reasonable terms.
Thank God. These hand movements are too aggressive. I can't stand it.
Thank you guys so much. The only reason we make the effort to do this on the road and not record later is because you support us. Patreon.com/BoarsGoreSwords. If you want to throw us some money, there is links in the show notes. We're going to do some more bonus episodes. We're already doing the A Song of Ice and Fire episodes. We're doing one every other week. Those have been a lot of fun. We also have our the latest Avengers, which is called Infinity Wars, the final Marvel movie ever made. And it was a lot of fun
plural,
talking about that.
And it's not final. It's not plural, and it's not final.
Well, it should be plural, first off, because there's a lot of wars in that movie.
It's just one singular war happening at one time.
Fine, Infinity Battles. Get over it.
Thank you.
You can find us on Twitter at BoysGoreSwords. You can find Ivan on Twitter at Ivan_Hernandez.
And you can find Red on Twitter at Red_Scott.
Bye.
See ya.